This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Brewers Outlet, Sunbury Motor Company, and Purdy Insurance. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf online, sunburymotors.com, Ford, Kia, Hyundai, the best in new inventory. Budget may be screaming pre-owned inventory. Well, if it is, go to Sunbury Motors because they go over every vehicle with a fine-tooth comb, giving you the Sunbury Motors guarantee. Service department, whether it's inspections, routine, difficult to handle it all with ease. At Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Tuesdays with Neil. Favorite time for me every week. Sir, welcome.
As always, it is my pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
All right, so the Steelers, you know, sometimes we look at formulas, and I know they did not create a takeaway against the Chargers, and Fields did throw the interception. But when you watch Fields play, is he doing a good job, in your opinion, of staying away from the big mistake that puts a defense in peril?
Yeah, I think that's been probably the top of the game plan. Four Fields and probably every quarterback since Roethlisberger, in fact, in Pittsburgh. I don't recall them even really challenging down the field vertically. Fields did a good job spreading it around the field, which hasn't been all that typical. They've kind of attacked the boundary a bit more than usual, but they were hitting stuff in the middle of the field. They went down the seam a little bit, but I don't think he had a throw, maybe one more than 12 yards. And what that's really saying is we don't want to throw into cover two. We don't want to challenge their safeties, their playmakers down the field with a field-flipping type of play. You know, even if we can get that field-flipping opportunity, we're probably not going to take it because we want to maintain possession and give our offense a chance to control the game with what we want to do, which is run the ball. I don't know how successful they have been running the ball overall. I know that they're down at least, you know, two legitimate starters, with the third, I would say, that Zach Frazier was going to be the starter of this team at some point or other. But Isaac Ciamalo has been out. Troy Fatano is supposed to be the starting right tackle. Now he is out. It's not working overall, I think, but Fields has been kind of the glue that's kept it together, just because he's played better each game, I think. Good decision making. His accuracy has definitely improved. I was a little worried there at the first game. I think there were some nerves that he's worked out, and I think Arthur Smith has done a great job constructing something around Fields and what Fields is comfortable with. It's not exactly the same stuff each week, and they are sticking to a plan that is working come the fourth quarter. They get the splash play from Calvin Austin, did a great job seeing the throw, seeing the lane that was there, and then Austin, as fast as he is, being able to get his shoulders upfield and make a big play. They're putting all of that together, and it's making an offense that generally has not been successful drive to drive, short of getting an outstanding season from their kicker. It's giving them the opportunity to let their defense dictate the terms of the game, which they absolutely did once again. I mean, you're looking at it's weird. The conversation is all about Fields. It's all about the offense, and you're looking at I don't know how many times in the last 20 years the Steelers have had a three-game run of defensive dominance the way that they just did. Now everyone's going to throw the quarterback that they're facing up against them. I don't know. I saw Justin Herbert out there for the majority of the game. I saw Justin Herbert do next to nothing the entire game. They're locking him down. They're playing great football, three depths of the defensive field, and it's allowing Fields to really just kind of say, I'm going to take this because it's there. There's guys coming in. I can try to make a play with my legs. We'll see if something happens with that. Otherwise, we're going to live to play another down. We're not afraid of punting. We can play defense with this team. We can take the ball away. And like you said, they might not have done that against the Chargers, but they came close. Patrick Queen had the ball in his hands. I don't know how he didn't lock that one up, but they're going to make plays on the ball. They're going to hit the quarterback, and they're going to put their offense in a position to take control of the game late, which is exactly what they did.
Yeah, and the reason I mentioned the takeaway thing is that normally the formula is you're even or you're plus on takeaways, and it just turns out, ironically, that was a game they didn't get any. That's just an ironic thing. But your point about the ability to lock teams down, that's the part that strikes me, is that no matter who they play, Neil, they're locking down. No, they're taking away the best players. They're forcing teams to go with guys that are not the best players as options. That's what I'm seeing.
Yeah, overall, everything, and rightly so, is about J.K. Dobbins heading into that game. Dobbins didn't do anything, you know. Herbert went out. We saw that Herbert went out. But what was funny to me, I don't think Taylor Heinicke did anything. He may as well have just thrown the ball at the ground. The Steelers' defense basically made their entire offense tap out by that point. You were starting to see... when Nick Herbig is heating up, he's getting two sacks. What a great pass rusher he is, incidentally.
Isn't he?
Obviously, it's fun to watch T.J. Watt play, but Herbig is a high-level yep. pass rusher. I mean, he really is. Putting
loved
him in the
him
game,
at Wisconsin.
Getting that added emphasis.
Yeah, I really liked Herbig. I liked a lot at Wisconsin. When he played there, I thought, this guy's going to be a really good NFL player.
Yeah, the fact that he's able to fill in for a player like Alex Highsmith and have a better yep. game in less time really goes to show that schematically what the Steelers are doing is working well. The players that they have are fitting in well with what they want to do, and it's paralyzing opposing offenses. And maybe this is just me where my lens is focused, but looking around the rest of the league, you're seeing the overwhelming majority of the NFL looking like that offensively. It's strange. You know, you've brought up in this segment cover two and what teams are doing with that. It's having an impact, but it's like an offense doesn't know what to do if their primary stuff isn't working anymore, and defenses are having no problem just putting the foot on the gas and continuing to go. You have to wonder how much of it is just an overwhelming defensive schematic victory above anything else. You know, with the Steelers, obviously there are players, they can make plays, but it just looks like the opposing offense is so confused. They don't know what's going on. They're hanging on to the ball really long. They're not all making good decisions with the ball. So what that brings me to is, obviously you have super freaks like Josh Allen who are you know, immune to all of this, as it turns out. But by and large, the teams that are winning the most games right now are the ones with quarterbacks that don't have eye-popping numbers, but they don't have mistakes either. Fields, I mean, you know, you'll get an interception here and there, but put Fields up against, for example, C.J. Stroud, a player that everyone anointed as, you know, a three-time Super Bowl champion after a good rookie season. The Minnesota Vikings completely destroyed him on Sunday. For what I have seen of Stroud, a player that I really like, we have not seen him look as confused, as out of place and as uncomfortable as what Brian Flores and the Vikings defense did to him. Justin Fields is not seeing that. They're not doing right to him what other quarterbacks are having done to them. And it makes you wonder, is this a season where we're going to see kind of more, you know, style of football from 20, 25 years ago, more defensive-based, successful running, if not individual dominance in running, and quarterbacks that are there to not turn the ball over, to manage the game. I hate that phrase, but do what you're supposed to do within the plan and make the plays you're supposed to make. We're not going to have to take a lot of chances if this game is going to be 17-13. We don't want to make the killer turnover. We're, you know, as opposed to the wide open spread area in which quarterbacks are fine if they have two interceptions, because they're going to throw five touchdown passes and 500 yards. That doesn't seem to be what teams are doing now to win. And the teams that are trying to do that, they're not being all that successful, with the exception of Buffalo, of course. There's always got to be one. It's to me, the best teams overall right now, they're getting good play from their quarterback, but it's more not in a statistical sense, but more in a protection sense. They are maintaining possession of the ball, and they're putting the ball where it needs to go and picking up yards, over drives, over time, and eventually they're going to hit on something like the Steelers did. So as far as Fields is concerned, I mean, it's almost like this type of game across the league fits him really well. If they can get him to do these things, he has the athleticism to save a few plays. He's got strong enough of an arm to hit on a third and long here and there. And if you're managing him well, he can make the right decisions of where to go with the ball, even with a pretty mediocre group of receivers. And a Steelers offense that really lacks pop overall can manage to win games 20-10 and have it seem like it was pretty one-sided the whole time.
And that's they're controlling the game. In other words, the Steelers are the ones, to me, Neil, that, and whether it's how the offense is playing, because they're eating some clock as they do this, they're not, for the most part, turning it over. They're staying away from the big mistake. Their defense does its job. The Steelers are controlling the tempo and tone of every game they play in right now, and it's frustrating the opponent.
Yeah, that's kind of what I mean. It's Jim Harbaugh, it's early in the season. He's not going to go out of his way to express a whole lot of frustration, but you have to think, at a point in the fourth quarter, it's like, we haven't done anything all day. Nothing has fallen for us all day. And it's not like we haven't done well defensively. That's a good defensive team. They did some things. Derwin James, I think the lawman finally caught up to him.
Yeah.
A few of those hits were kind of like, whoa, you've been talked to about this before. Something's coming. So, you have that intimidation factor. They played well defensively. They're a good team, and they're going up against you can't be intimidated by the combination in a pass rush sense of Dan Moore and Broderick Jones right now. So you'd think they'd get after the passer a little bit more, but they didn't do enough to confuse Fields the way the Steelers' defense confused Herbert and completely shut down Heinicke, whatever it is that he even did in the time that he was in there. So you almost have to think, it's like they never got out of the garage. They never got a chance to get moving. And that had come fourth quarter, when all of a sudden now that the Vikings have, or that the Steelers have the splash play, you have to think that from a Chargers perspective, it's got to be maddening that they were unable really to do that all game. And the touchdown play was pretty nice, a good read, a good play call, kind of confused Minkah Fitzpatrick a little bit. But beyond that, they really didn't have chunk plays, and none in the second half. And I think that, above anything else, has been the Steelers' calling card to this point. Frustrate them all game to a point where the battle of attrition really pushes in their favor over the final 30 minutes of the game. And we've seen them, they completely destroyed Atlanta in the opener in the second half, and they shut down Los Angeles pretty good in week three. So you're looking at, overall, I think, a team that is keeping their head, they're keeping their composure, and they want to play this style of ball. If you're used to running up the score and that's not happening to you, I think frustration can set in. But if anybody's used to not scoring points in the NFL right now, it's the Pittsburgh Steelers. So
right.
In that way, it almost kind of, this is what they've been building for. As odd as that is, we'll see if a three-game losing streak comes next. You're still not entirely sure how this team is going to hold up long term, but with a defense like that, you're not going to be easy to beat. No one's going to want to play you. So you have to think they've got a puncher's chance of winning a pretty good chunk of games the way that the first three have gone.
Well, defense and a place kicker. I mean, they get the ball to the 35-yard line, which is not the red zone. They feel pretty good they're going to get points. I mean, you don't have to drive the ball that far to get points in the Pittsburgh offense.
No, not when you have a kicker that seems to be getting better. He's longer.
Yeah.
I remember there was a time when Boswell was shaky at best at 50 yards. Now they're trotting him out there for 57, and you feel like he's got a pretty good shot at it. So with that in mind, with their ability to, you know, take the ball away, I think it speaks to the idea then that if you've been playing the game to hold on to the ball, grind out yards, high completion, low sack pass attempts, even if your guys are not making plays after the catch, which with the exception of Calvin Austin, no one's really doing that.
Right.
You can set up 15 yards in eight plays and, you know, kick a long field goal and be able to get points out of the situation that you're in. That's almost like a touchdown for the Steelers' defense. Mm-hmm. You trade out possessions like that, you're able to defend deep the way that they have been. They haven't given up a big play, I don't think, this season. 25-plus, maybe something around that mark, but nothing 40. You're taking a team's ability away to engage in an explosive plays game, which is really how Pittsburgh has lost, certainly in the playoffs the last couple of years. If they can hold teams away from that, they have to be real happy with the ability to cut, you know, almost, you know, 20 yards on each side of the field out and let your kicker be able to go from 55 and in. It gives them the opportunity to create more points for themselves. Even though that hasn't really materialized in comparison to last year, overall their third down numbers are a lot better. They have better possessions overall. They're holding on to the ball longer. These are all positive stats, and I think, you know, getting back to the main point, Fields can be credited with a lot of that. You know, you don't even have a Deontay Johnson anymore. They're trying to get George Pickens the ball. He's getting, I think, six targets a game to this point. Doesn't catch a whole lot of them, makes a couple plays, has some stuff turned back on garbage penalties. But they don't have, like, a primary guy to go to. I think Najee Harris is second in targets right now, and the next time he catches the ball more than 3 yards down the field, it'll be the first. So it's something they're going to have to grind out. I think that they know that. And having that reliable kicker is really going to be the difference. And I, to an extent, I think that has been so far. You know, their opponents are making kicks as well, but Boswell's been pretty lights out, and they're probably going to need more of that as they continue.
It's interesting, you know, in the simplistic world of covering, you know, talk shows, roundtables, things like that, they always talk about the cover two concept. Always. That's all I hear. Cover two, cover two, cover two, like, it's all the coordinators. Newsflash, you have to actually have people that can play it. You'd be shocked. I can run two high school players out there playing cover two in the NFL, and they're going to be beat like a drum. Okay. What is it about the Steelers' safeties as to how they play cover two that makes it an effective Steeler defense?
If I were to break it down, and I think there are multiple layers to that question, but if I were to break it down, I think what you're going to find is this isn't Tony Dungy's cover two. You know, this isn't the Tampa two where it's two guys back and you're doing what you're doing underneath. They're running a lot of three safety looks. They're running a lot of dime looks. It's a matter of how they're using the other linebackers. And if you want to credit anyone other than T.J. Watt, of course, to the defensive success of the Steelers on the field, as far as their personnel is concerned, it's somewhere between Patrick Queen and Landon Roberts. They're both playing very, very good football, and it's in coverage. You're seeing them drop a bit deeper, I think, than the linebackers have the last couple of years for the Steelers. Their inside linebackers have been kind of an Achilles heel for a variety of different reasons. Queen has played better at that position than anybody they've had since Ryan Shazier, and that's exactly why they signed him. They needed to bring somebody in that could be that all-downs alpha linebacker, and he's playing very well. You know, he's getting dogged last week for not really making any splash plays. That's fine. He's around the ball all the time. Get him near the ball. That's great. He's attacking the edge on runs. He's able to fill gaps. He's an emotional leader of the team. Like I said, I still can't believe he dropped that one ball. Considering the heat that he's taken for not making a play, that would have been a great one to make, and it was a great time for him to have done it. But he's playing great football. That, I think, is giving them more ability to split their safeties, which, keep in mind, they're also playing four safeties. They don't usually play that many safeties throughout a game. And you're not doing What I think really is Minkah Fitzpatrick's best, which is, you know, that solo center field cover one type of look. They're more effective overall as a defense in cover two. You're probably going to limit the amount of plays that Minkah's going to make in that, but it creates kind of a funnel to the middle of the field. And if Queen is in there, Roberts is in there, and they're able to make plays, they're able to be aggressive in coverage, there's even more that you can do up front. And you're still getting high-level play from Cam Hayward. Obviously, T.J. Watt is who he is. I thought Highsmith was playing well until he got hurt. And you saw what Herbig can do in Highsmith's absence. You're also seeing the continued emergence of Keanu Benton up front. I think they have a lot of guys that are playing very well within the structure that they have. But I think the thing that's keeping it all together as far as a cover two look goes is their linebacker's ability to drop vertically, to cover the flats, and to attack downhill in front of them. It's making it really hard for teams to find anywhere to go with the ball on an easy throw, an easy opportunity. It doesn't mean that they're never going to give up a pass, but this team's allowing 160 yards a game passing. And they're facing more runs than anybody in their top five in sacks. So it's a unit that's highly productive play to play. And for me, I think obviously with T.J. Watt is everything, but the ability of Queen and Roberts and the way that they have played, the way that they have handled their business on either side of each other has been the catalyst for the entire unit to have improved the way that it has.
Wonderful. Incredible as always. Sir, thank you so much. Appreciate you.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
Neil Coulong on the show today. Lauren Tate next half hour, Champaign News Gazette, where he has covered the Illini for decades. We'll talk to the great man next half hour. This half hour brought to you by Sunbury Motors. 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
If you want to have a fun day, you have to drive a Hyundai. From Sunbury Motors Hyundai, you'll be busting through the snow this winter with these incredible all-wheel drive savings. Lease a third-row seat all-wheel drive Santa Fe for only $450 a month for 36 months. Choose a 2024 all-wheel drive Sonata for only $29,674. Or a 2025 all-wheel drive Kona for just $28,968. Looking for a compact truck? Sunbury Motors Hyundai has 17 Santa Cruzes in stock with savings up to $1,774. Remember, all new Hyundais come with America's best warranty, 10 years, 100,000 miles. We're not done. Lease an 80 MPG Hyundai Tucson plug-in hybrid for only $465 a month for 36 months. Sunbury Motors has 53 Tucsons available. Hard to believe it, but winter is just around the corner, and now is the time to save big money on your next new all-wheel drive Hyundai from Sunbury Motors Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. 36-month leases are 10,000 miles a year with $4,000 down. See dealer for details.
Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and Sunbury Motor Company. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
This half hour being brought to you by our good friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports Domestics Microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere. Wine Coolers Water Soft Drink Snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. Six great flavors of slushies. And the Pickle Bar, led by the Barrels and the Dills, indeed second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury. The beverage supermarket. Stock up for your tailgate now at Brewers Outlet. Again, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. In our business, he is a legend, and I'm proud to call him friend, and that is Lauren Tate, Champaign News Gazette, and also part of the Illini Network. Lauren, how are you? Doing well?
I'm hanging in. Just like the Illini, hanging in until the next game.
Well, this is a 4-0 start. Illini basketball excites the populace. Deep run, elite eights, things like that. Illini football fights for every inch with the fan base. What has this 4-0 start meant to the fan base in Champaign-Urbana and in the state?
Well, they seem to be a little more inspired. They, you know, we had a good start in 2 years ago, in 22, and that kind of fizzled with a couple of losses to Michigan State and Purdue at home that were expected wins, you know, after the Illini had gotten off to a 7-1 start. So then they went backwards last year, and this year we've kind of put things together. Two main reasons that I see are the second-year quarterback, having Lou Altmyer back from last year and having the same coordinator with him, and then the fact that the secondary has matured this year. We had a lot of injuries last year, and believe it or not, we've gone through four games. I don't think we have a single guy missing from the game going into the Penn State game. We lost Rusk, our tight end, before the season, but I think the fans have kind of caught on, and the Michigan game, being the 100th anniversary of Red Grange, has been an awful big incentive for the fans to get involved this year.
Right, and that'll be later in the year. Altmyer last year had some good moments, some down moments. He threw touchdown passes, but he also threw interceptions. This year, 10 touchdowns, no interceptions. What have you seen? And I know Barry does a good job of calling things. I've got that part. But what are you seeing from Altmyer that has made him better on the field?
Well, I think he's just being more careful. I mean, the Penn State game last year was his low point. He had four interceptions in that game, and Penn State controlled the football game. And so, you know, there wasn't much to say about it. It was just a bad game for the Illini, and Penn State dominated. But after that, he played much better. And although he was replaced with an injury late in the season, and John Paddock came in and did such a good job that Paddock actually finished the season. But I think Altmyer has gained a lot of maturity over the year. And I did some research on the last 14 Illinois quarterbacks who played the second year. All but two, 12 of the 14, had much better seasons the second year. I think that 1 year of experience makes all the difference.
And he has receivers. Pat Bryant's been really good. And then getting Franklin to come over from Ole Miss, what has that meant along with the tight end Arkin?
Well, you got to remember that Lunny was the coach in San Antonio, Texas San Antonio. The two of them had combined for some really good pass offense. As a matter of fact, they beat Illinois up here before Lunny took the job here as offensive coordinator. So this is third year for Lunny as offensive coordinator, and I think he's gotten better and better, and I think he, in bringing Franklin with him, he spent a year at Ole Miss, but he just redshirted there last year.
Right.
And now this is his senior year, fifth year, and he's been a big boost to the team along with Bryant. We got a good 1-2 punch in those two receivers.
How have you felt about the play of the offensive line in A, protecting Altmyer, and B, generating a running game?
Average. I'd say it's average. Even in the Nebraska game, he was forced to run a lot. He actually ran 10 times for 21 yards, mainly just being chased. And he had some problems. He was 21 out of 27, but he had to throw several away. He completed the ball almost every time he threw it when he was throwing to a receiver. He did have two drops, and then he had about three thrown out of bounds. So you can see that when you go 21 out of 27, that's a high completion percentage when you had to throw some away.
The running backs, four of them are used. Everybody knows the big man, McCray, who made the one-handed catch, but he's also like a bulldozer out there. And Fagan looks like he's got a lot to him. How have you felt about the four running backs?
I think we got four good average running backs. None of them have. This is not Chase Brown, which we had a couple years ago, you'll remember. He was a really quality runner. And they're just alternating these four. I think what's happened this year more than any that I've seen is that Bielema's trying to keep his team fresh. He's doing a lot of substituting on defense. He's moving the cornerback in and out. He's moving the linebackers in and out. And also he's got three good defensive ends at two positions that he's moving in and out. And I think the running back situation, he used all four of them in the game. And, you know, he just alternated and keeping everybody fresh. It's kind of a new approach, I think, for him.
What makes Xavier Scott a quality defensive player on the back end?
Well, I think his instincts and his ability to – he's got speed, and he's been able to – you know, he's been on the team a couple of years, and I think he was a good player last year, but, you know, when he wasn't injured. And the whole thing about the secondary last year was the injuries. I mean, we really had problems that way. So far this year, the top six cornerbacks are still – I'm sorry, the top six defensive backs are all still healthy as far as we know. And I think they're ready to go against Penn State, and he'll alternate them in there, in and out, keeping everybody fresh.
Yeah, because Miles Scott has been very good. Not just Xavier Scott, but Miles Scott has been very good. And I think Torrey Cox, the transfer from Ohio University, who made that terrific interception against Nebraska, I know he's in his second year as well, and it looks like they have guys that can not only play the run, but also are pretty good cover guys.
Pretty good cover. I think Cox had some troubles after that one steal, and they replaced him with Brooks, who was a transfer from Texas, former four-star player, and one of our better transfers. And so, and like I said, they've been alternating, and Cox has had his ups and his downs, and we've noticed some good plays that he's had, and also in some cases Nebraska tried to pick on him. So, you know, he's only about 5'8", and he's not very tall, and he's a fighter. But I think as we move along here, it's just whether this is going to work. I don't know. Illinois's got three awfully big games coming up with Penn State and Michigan and Oregon, which they'll be big underdogs in all three. And of course, they got Purdue in there as well. But in the next four games, this is a team that, and so far, all I can tell you is that we're in the best shape we could be going into this game.
After losing at Kansas last year and the way Illinois lost that game, was the win over Kansas this year an emotional hurdle they needed to clear?
Yeah, I think it was an emotional hurdle there at home, and then another emotional hurdle to win at Nebraska. I mean, Nebraska whipped us last year, too. And so Illinois has reversed two of those losses, and we'll try to do the third one Saturday night.
Right, yeah. Obviously, what about the pass rush? We referenced the deep five, deep six guys. What about the pass rush for Illinois?
We got a good pass rush from the outside rushers, not so much from the inside. You remember we had Newton last year and Randolph. Yeah. We had a really great pair of tackles turned pro. I mean, Newton turned pro. Randolph got cut by the Bears, but Newton is still playing. And he'll have a long career. But we don't have much push from the inside. We have exceptional defensive ends. They call them outside linebackers, but their knuckles are down there. They're basically defensive ends, and Akis and Bryant and Coleman are the three guys, and they're all really good experienced players and all pretty good rushers, and those three of them are playing the two positions, although sometimes they move Akis into tackle, but I don't know if you can do that against the teams with a good running game. I think it's you need a little more beef in there, I'm afraid.
You go back to covering the Big Ten when they were, ironically, 10 teams. Then Penn State came in 31 years ago, and then it's Nebraska. I remember being on with you and with Brian Barnhart in, I think it was a basketball pregame show.
Yeah.
And Brian asked me.
We did a lot of them, didn't we?
we've done a lot of them. We're going to do another one on Saturday, I think. And Brian asked, we're asking everybody who we think the 12th team should be. And I said, Hawaii.
And that drew a big laugh. Even Ed Bond liked that.
Even Ed Bond liked that. I said, so you guys, I said, you have to think outside the box, man. I said, we get to go to Hawaii every couple of years for football. We get to go there every year for basketball. I said, what do you guys want to do? Bring in Duluth? I said, come on. But we've gone
crazy bringing in the four teams from the far west. I'm telling you.
Well, that's what I. That's what
a good trip when you go out when you leave Penn State and go out there.
No, I know, but that's what my question's leading to. Maryland and Rutgers excited nobody. Okay,
right.
I think that's a fair statement, and that includes people here. It may be a shorter trip for Penn State to go there. I got that, but it didn't excite anybody. How do you feel about the four West Coast schools coming in, Lauren, based on your experience of what you think the Big Ten should be?
Oh, I don't like it at all. I mean, you know, I'm old-fashioned, and I think it's crazy. I'm hoping we go to 24 teams and then divide up into six divisions, and then we'd be right back where we should be. You know, I believe in geographical contests. You know, I think we should be playing. We don't play Iowa this year. Now, that's crazy. Illinois should play Iowa every year. Illinois should play Wisconsin, but we don't play them this year. I mean, this kind of scheduling is just insanity as far as I'm concerned, but it's all about money. It's all about TV, and the TV people make the decisions. The original decision on Maryland was because Maryland's close to Washington, and they would have a big all those people would be going to Maryland games and watching Maryland games. And the same thing, Rutgers is right next to New York, so all those millions of New Yorkers would be. It's crazy. They don't care about Rutgers, and Washington doesn't care about Maryland. That's just the way it is.
Right. So let me at least bring the Penn State part into it. Penn State surprised a lot of people. And I talked, by the way, geez, this summer, Stan Eikenberry was here in State College. I had a long talk with him about this. And, of course,
worked for him for 20 years. She was his speechwriter.
Yeah, a terrific guy.
Wonderful guy.
Yeah. But Penn State, he was the driving force to open the door for Penn State. Look, you're covering the Big Ten at the time. A, did you like the addition of Penn State, or were you against it? And how do you feel about it now, 31 years later?
Well, 31 years later, I feel good about it. At the time, I wasn't thrilled by it. I just felt like the Big Ten was going out of its area to do that. And I liked the numbers as they were, but I've learned to more than accept Penn State. And I feel like they're a great addition to the conference. I don't know how far you can go with this. You know, I wonder if Maryland doesn't feel like most of their natural rivalries are right there in the ACC, aren't they?
Absolutely. Every time I go there, Lauren, every time I go there, I have people coming up to me saying, I wish we were in the ACC. Because they just missed the ACC days. Now, these are basketball fans. I'm not, you know. So that's where you really get a chance to talk to people is at a basketball game. And they miss playing Duke. They miss playing North Carolina, Virginia. I mean, they miss that.
Yeah. Well, I can understand it. I mean, I think that's just like I said. We should be playing our natural rival. We should be playing Iowa in football and Wisconsin in football. We don't play them. We should be playing, much as I hate to face them, Ohio State. We've had a long, great rivalry with Ohio State. Now, they've come to dominate, obviously, but Ohio State will bring out fans at Illinois that might not attend the game.
I'll ask you one last question. It does deal with the Red Grange game. The 100th anniversary of it. What plans does Illinois have around that to celebrate it, to make it special? Because they must have a long list of things they want to do.
You know, just everything you can imagine, all kinds of meetings, all kinds of tailgating is going to go on. It's the biggest game. I'm going to say maybe it's the biggest game since I've been here, in the sense that everybody's just, you know, we've all gone back to the Red Grange period and know what he did in the game and the 39 points against a team that, you know, was throwing shutouts most of the time in that era. And it's just going to be a celebration. It's what it is. And, you know, they worked for three or four years ahead of time
to get this game scheduled, to make sure, and you know, and now we're talking about, well, what time's the game going to be? Well, TV is going to decide. I wonder TV will decide, or if maybe Whitman has already, Josh Whitman, the athletic director, has already talked to somebody there and maybe got the game at a preferable time. I don't know if they want to play it at night, but I would think probably late afternoon would be better.
How often did you talk with Russ Redgrange before he passed in 1991, and what kind of individual did he strike you as?
Oh, he was a tremendous individual. He was just the nicest man you ever met. Now, I did not have any personal... it was a business relationship. I mean, I did interview him every time he came to town, but, it, you know, I'm saved three or four times total. That's all. And, you know, he didn't come back to Illinois often at that point in his life, but I think he was living in Florida at the end. And, you know, I didn't get to know him really well, but I did have him. I was doing TV at the time, and I did interview him on television, and had some, you know, natural. I'm sure that a lot of people here felt like that. He, you know, it was great to see him when he did come back. He's a terrific guy. By the way, I want to leave one thing with you.
Please.
Illinois has started 4-0 one time in 2011 since 1951.
Wow.
You're still standing?
Wow.
At 72 years, we did it one time. This is the second time. 2011, we did it 51, 2011, and this year. Is that unbelievable? Can you imagine what the Penn State football program would be like if you never won four in a row all those years?
Oh, boy.
I'm talking about the first four, of course.
Right, right.
Even our best championship teams lost a game early or tied one early
Crazy.
Back in the day.
Crazy.
Isn't that incredible?
That is incredible.
Oof. 1951, I was a junior in college.
Wow. Unreal. Lauren, I know I'm going to be with you and Steve Kelly Saturday morning for a segment, so I'm looking forward to that. So thanks so much for your time. As always, my friend, you are the best.
Well, it's always great to hear your voice. You know that. And Ed says hello.
Ed Bond. Ed Bond.
Talk to you later.
See you, Lauren.
Bye-bye.
Lauren Tate. Champaign News Gazette, and also the Illini Network. Second time since 1951 they've started 4-0? That's remarkable. By the way, let me ask you something, Todd. How many yards in his career did Redgrange rush for at Illinois?
5,000.
Too high.
Oh. 3,000.
Too high.
1,000?
2,074 yards.
Wow.
He averaged 5.4 yards a carry. Now, he also threw for 575 yards in his career, but he also had 11 interceptions in his career as a defensive back. Okay. He had in his career 2,649 yards in total offense, which is, about 900 a season, and 33 touchdowns in his career.
The 33 touchdowns was a record at the time, wasn't it?
Yes.
So I thought.
Yeah, it was.
Was.
But of course... Like, with that game against Michigan, did he score, six touchdowns?
I believe that's what it was.
Right? Well, that season, how many touchdowns do you think he scored?
11.
13.
Ah.
So he only had seven other touchdowns the rest of the season. How about that? He's like, you know, like it's, it, there's such lore around him. You know, and part of it was going to the Bears 1925 and so forth. But he did not have, like by today's standards and stats, I mean, well, he had to average, like, you know, it makes it seem like he averaged, like, 9 yards a carry. How about 5.4 for his career?
It was also more like rugby back then at times.
Yeah. Oh, I know. Yep, I know. All right. Wrap it up in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Brewers Outlet.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
Hi, this is Season. For over 100 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. With the experience of our trained and knowledgeable staff, you can rest assured that your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 570-286-5855. Visit our website at purdyinsurance.com or check us out on Facebook to see what we can do for you.
If you want to have a fun day, you have to drive a Hyundai. From Sunbury Motors Hyundai, you'll be busting through the snow this winter with these incredible all-wheel drive savings. Lease a third-row seat all-wheel drive Santa Fe for only $450 a month for 36 months. Choose a 2024 all-wheel drive Sonata for only $29,674. Or a 2025 all-wheel drive Kona for just $28,968. Looking for a compact truck? Sunbury Motors Hyundai has 17 Santa Cruzes in stock with savings up to $1,774. Remember, all new Hyundais come with America's best warranty, 10 years, 100,000 miles.
We're not done.
Lease an 80 MPG Hyundai Tucson plug-in hybrid for only $465 a month for 36 months. Sunbury Motors has 53 Tucsons available. Hard to believe it, but winter is just around the corner. And now is the time to save big money on your next new all-wheel drive Hyundai from Sunbury Motors Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury.
36-month leases are 10,000 miles a year with $4,000 down. See dealer for details.